Now, there are many religions and spiritual practices in the world, and almost all of them are complex. They're based on elaborate histories that are in various Bibles and spiritual texts and Qurans, etc., etc. There are extensive studies of these. People memorize pages and pages. Some people can put a pin through a Bible or Quran and tell you every word that's in that particular hole. People study the Torah word by word by word. And all of these actually are kind of spiritual practice, but they have a great deal of complexity. They get the mind going. They get thoughts going. They create certain notions and ideas that then distinguish the believer from the non-believer and create all sorts of problems in the world, which we're all very aware of and I don't have to go into. Now, if you really were to look closely at these various religions, you can often boil them down to some essential teaching. And if someone were to be able just to penetrate into that teaching, they would probably grasp everything that they need to know. For example, in Judaism, in spite of the Torah and all the many teachings and the various orthodox, conservative reform branches, etc., etc., there's a prayer in Judaism that goes like this: Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, which means literally, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Now, you could just stop there. You could just use that as the essence of that practice. Now, in Christianity, I don't know it that well, but there are certain things that Jesus said. One of them was, love thy neighbor as thyself. You could just stop there. Or, Father, into your arms I commend my spirit. That's all you need to know. That would be the whole of it. Now, Buddhism, too, has a lot of complexity. It has various schools. It has many sutra. It has Zen, in particular, has all sorts of books written about it, thousands of koan, etc., etc. But Buddhism, really, in its essence, is very, very simple. And Zen is even simpler than most of Buddhism. Zen could be boiled down to one statement by the Buddha. He said this. He said, develop a mind that abides nowhere. That's it. That's all you have to know about Zen. You don't need to know anything else. Develop a mind that abides nowhere. All the rest of it, you know, can be very helpful, can push you in certain directions, can untie certain knots. But if you want to go to the essence of what this practice is, it is that. Develop a mind that abides nowhere. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean to abide? In this context, to abide means to get stuck, to stop somewhere, to identify with something. So the abiding mind is the mind that identifies basically with an idea. Now, it may be many, many ideas, but the deepest idea is here I am and there is the world. Inside me is an entity, and the world is outside me. And I abide in the sense of duality, that here I am and there is the world. So this is the abiding mind. Now, the abiding mind doesn't just stop there. It elaborates on this. It starts with a sense that there's a separation, that therefore, if there's a separation, there must be a me inside an entity. Now, we go on in this abiding mind. We all do this as a human condition. This entity has certain characteristics. It's male, it's female, it's Democrat, it's Republican, it's a Southerner, it's a Northerner, it's an American, it's a Russian, etc., etc., etc. It can get very, very complex. I've been harmed. I've been injured. I'm jealous. I'm angry. These things that we get fixed on, that we get stuck on. Now, on top of that, we abide in descriptions of this so-called outside world. So we have the sense that there's a fixed thing inside that has characteristics. And we look at the world, and rather than seeing it in its actuality, which is constantly changing, like a flowing river, we name things. Now, we do this in order to survive. It's very important. We've called this before the map-making process. As human beings, we are superb at that. We're excellent at making maps, and we make them in order to stay safe, to achieve certain goals, to avoid harm, etc., etc. So we have to relearn at every moment, like someone with Alzheimer's disease, that when you're ready to cross the street, you have to look both ways, and if you forgot that, you might get nailed by a truck. It's very useful. But it's just a map. I just got back from Oregon. I did a trip there. And it was amazingly beautiful. Just lovely. Mountains, flowing rivers, this ocean with these jagged black rocks right off the shore, and these big, vast beaches, empty, and just big sky. This desert chaparral, 2,000-3,000 feet, just desert and a chaparral and heat. And then into the mountains, these snow-covered volcanoes, lava fields, the Columbia River Gorge with a big flowing river and waterfalls plunging down. It's just this staggering, beautiful, giant, ancient trees. And just to elaborate on this abiding mind, I remembered a comment made by one of our presidents. I think it was Ronald Reagan, but it could have been the elder George Bush. It was literally the stupidest comment ever made by a human being in all of history. The comment was, if you've seen one redwood, you've seen them all. This is an abiding mind. I'm not looking at this nameless. Ah, it's a redwood. You can chop it down, turn it into a picnic table. You've seen one, you've seen them all, right? You've seen one river, you've seen them all. You've seen one car, you've seen them all. You've seen one person, you've seen them all. I mean, where does that stop? Where does that abiding in an idea of a tree, an idea of a mountain, stop? And how do we stop it? In Zen, it's very, very, very simple. Drastically simple. It stops in one way, by Zen, as I've defined it. Now, Zen comes from the Sanskrit term jhana, which means absorption. So in Zen, we learn to practice absorption. What does this mean? It means partly being exceedingly attentive, noticing the ever-changing nature of reality. That you've seen one redwood, you've seen them all, is insanity. It's untrue. It's false. I don't even have a name for this thing I'm standing in front of. I've never seen anything like it before. I could call it a redwood, but it's this redwood. And it's unique. It's unique not only as a redwood, but in this moment, moment by moment by moment. And that is what we call Zazen. This is Zazen while you're out in the world. Here on the cushion, we practice Zazen in order to understand and learn this mind that doesn't abide. And I'm going to go deeply into that. I'm going to make it very simple, very basic, so we all understand what exactly it is we're doing here. So this is the non-abiding mind. We see not a fixed nature of reality or ourselves. It's not fixed. It's not stuck. It's not stopped. It's really like a flowing river. It's this moment by moment, feeling, sensation, sound, visual input, taste, touch, and flowing thoughts. And as we are aware of these things, we see that they're constantly changing, that they're not fixed. That's one side of this non-abiding. The other side of this Zen practice called absorption is kind of like a sponge. You've got a sponge here, and you've got a puddle of water on your counter here. The sponge absorbs the water. It's like that. The sponge takes up the water. Before, I had a puddle of water and I had a dry sponge. Now when I wipe up this thing, I've got a wet sponge. I can't tell the difference between the sponge and the water. I can't find exactly where one ends and the other starts. And that's the other side of this Zen, this absorption, is I can't tell where this so-called outside world that I am absorbed in ends, and this notion of a separate entity inside that I name me begins. I can't see that dividing line. I can't find it. Matter of fact, I try to find it in order to see that it's not there. I start with the faith that this separation, which is, seems so real, so solid, I've abided in this separation for so many lifetimes, but I have faith that there is no real line there, which makes me want to find out what is the nature of that line. What's on one side of it? What's on the other side of the line? What does this line look like? Is there a line there at all? So this is all part of this practice of Zen. So this non-abiding mind. Now, one thing that stops our mind is when we cling to something that we know must change, which is everything. So we get stuck. Things have to stay this way. I'm clinging to it, or I want more of it. You know, I like some of it, I just want more and more and more with no end. Kind of like the saying, it isn't enough until it's too much, and so many things in our lives become that way. All right, so that would be called clinging. Or rejecting, meaning there's something I can't tolerate. I push it away. I can't deal with it. So I resist it and fight it, and it gets stuck, and I get stuck. I'm here, it's there, and it's a stuck situation. This is the abiding mind. And another way we do this is by ignoring, just not noticing at all, just being oblivious. And that's another kind of stuck mind. We're oblivious, so we don't see the ever-changing nature of our actual experience. We just see it out there as something I don't want to deal with. So it's called ignoring. And these are, in Buddhism, called the three poisons. They're just ways that our mind gets into an abiding state. Clinging, rejecting or fighting, and ignoring or hiding from or not being able to deal or whatever it might be. So, I told a story at Sesshin. A couple of you were there and you heard this story. I'll just repeat it. Give you even a deeper notion of this non-abiding state. So this young woman told me a story. She had some intense struggles in her recent life with her husband, who had been drinking heavily, using drugs, was very verbally abusive, put her down, wasn't there to help out with the kids, etc., etc. And she decided to go to a place where previously in her life she gained a great deal of solace and insight, where she could be with people where there was no barrier, you could share anything, it would be totally accepted. So she went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And various people shared during this meeting, and she was too shy to say anything, but after the meeting was over, there was an old man there, and she struck up a conversation with the old man and started telling him what's going on and how stressful it was and how difficult it was. And he looked her in the eyes and he said to her, "Don't let it stop you." And she said, "But I get so despairing about it, and I just wanted it to be so perfect, and I realized that it wasn't, and what a terrible mistake." He looked her in the eyes and said, "Don't let it stop you." And she went on about how the kids were reacting and how painful it was, and she doesn't know if it'll ever get better. And he said again, "Don't let it stop you." And she said to me, "All of a sudden, I got it. Don't let it stop me. Don't let it stop me." And I thought about it. I heard this story just before I went to Sesshin. And in Sesshin, with the hours and hours of deep absorption, this memory came up and I saw it in such a new way. Don't let it stop me. What does it mean to be stopped? Which is, in essence means to abide. Remember when the Buddha said, develop a mind that abides nowhere. He meant by this, develop a mind that doesn't stop anywhere. What is it that stops me? An idea about myself. An idea about a situation. A sense of a strong feeling that I fight with and struggle with. And all of a sudden it means something about me. It means something about life. And my mind gets stuck there. And instead of being in what? In the flow of my actual moment-to-moment experience, which, as I said before, if you observe it, is exactly like a flowing river. It's exactly like this redwood tree now, in this moment, with everything around it, the wind, the sound of the wind, the crinkling of the leaves, the flowing of the river nearby, all this absolutely flowing, changing, ever-changing thing. Instead, I'm stopped by this idea. I'm stopped by this feeling. I'm stopped by this struggle. I'm stopped by this anger. I'm stopped by this depression. I identify with it. So the first thing we need to do when we realize we're doing this is remind ourselves, don't let it stop me. Don't let it stop me. Now, in Zazen and in our Zen practice, once again, I've said it is exceedingly simple. We have to find out what it means not to be stopped. What are you if you're not stopped? What are you if you are not some entity inside that you've named me? What are you if you're not that? If you're not stopped by that? In our Zazen, we find out what we are. Now, it's really quite simple. I'm not talking about an idea that has to be figured out. I'm talking about a reality that we absorb like a sponge. So, for example, in your Zazen, if you're working with breath, all right, we'll talk about the various major modes of Zazen. So the first one would be breath practice, either counting the breath or following the breath. When we are really following the breath, we are absorbed in this actual breath, not the one, you've seen one redwood tree, you've seen one in breath, you've seen them all. It's this, I can't name it. Now. We return to that flowing river experience. We are unsticking ourselves just by watching the breath coming in and out in its actuality, not the idea of the breath, which is seen one redwood tree. So when we stay with the actuality of the breath, we have unstuck ourselves. We have not let it stop me. Because now I'm absorbed in the actual breath. Now, if I really get absorbed in this breath, really deeply let go of everything else, all ideas, just this breath, I can't find the line between breath and a so-called me, a stuck me. I can't find that line. So that's the essence of breath practice. Now, when Zazen is over and I'm doing my Kinhin, which is the walking meditation, or out in the world, I'm not watching my breath. That would interfere with this flowing river. I'd be stuck holding on to the breath. So what do? I stay in the flowing river of my experience. How can I do that? Because I practice it over and over with the breath. When I'm sitting, I make it very simple. I go deep into it to really learn this flowing mind state in the context of breath. And when I'm walking, it's the flow of walking. It's this actual walking, or what we might call becoming one with walking, or just walking. When walking, just walk. That means it's just walking. There's no me that's walking. That would be letting it stop you, letting the idea of a separate entity inside with characteristics stop the real you, with a capital Y, which is the walking. Okay, so this is how Zazen works. It's very, very simple. It's also very profound, and as I've said before, it's deeply mysterious. it's profoundly healing. We can't explain why, because the thinking mind, the mind that gets stuck, the mind that gets stopped and creates ideas and concepts, can't go to that place. It just can't go there. It's a realm it can't enter. So we leave these thoughts at the door when we're here, and we profoundly enter this practice. And we learn so much from doing that. So that when we're in Oregon and we're walking up a trail, and there's a flowing stream here, and then all of a sudden it's this giant whatever, it's not, you've seen one, you've seen them all. You know how to enter your experience. And you feel what? You feel so grateful that somehow someone told you that. You tripped on it, and it caught you, and you resonated with it, and you did it with your whole mind and body. This is why we here, this just the few of us here, we are so very fortunate to have tripped on this rare, simple, truthful practice. So remember that saying, Shema Yisrael, the Lord our God, meaning this whole big thing, God, everything, the body of God is everything, is one thing, no dividing lines. Father, into your arms I commend my spirit. I totally give up this sense of separateness and become one with you. All right, that's the essence. In Buddhism, we say, develop a mind that abides nowhere, no particular place. This is a flowing mind. It's a river-like mind. Now, one of the appellations, the names that are used to refer to the Buddha is Tathagata, which means literally, Tatha means that or thus, and Gata means gone. So it means one who has gone thus. The Buddha has gone thus. The Buddha's no longer identifying with an entity inside me, this separate thing with characteristics and problems, and who lacks this and that, and who's damaged, and all the rest of it. The Buddha has gone thus. It's the whole fabric of reality, as it is presenting itself, which is the meaning of the word thus. So when we talk about the Buddha, we can use the term Tathagata, the one that has gone thus. So what's another form of Zazen? So another of the three major forms of Zazen is something called Shikantaza. All right, so we had breath practice, which includes counting and following the breath. And Shikantaza, which is when breath practice or koan practice has been deeply experienced, we can then learn this practice of actually entering thus. This Shikantaza is Tathagata. It's going thus. It is sitting in the actual flow of the present moment with no other object, no striving of any kind other than to simply be what you really are, which is this flowing moment. And that is called Shikantaza. The literal meaning of Shikantaza is just to sit intensely. Shikan, just, ta is hit, zaz, zazen. So just to sit, hit, za literally means sit. So it means just to sit intensely. So this is not only developing a mind that abides nowhere, it's being in a non-abiding mind. It's being the non-abiding mind. There's no separation anymore. You are the non-abiding mind. Now it starts with faith that that's what you really are. Why do you have faith in it? Partly because you know that the teachers that have taught you are not lying to you. And partly because you have read things about Buddhism and you've encountered people who seem deeply helped by it. And it stimulates this faith, but even deeper, there's a knowledge already. I already know that as I am perfect. Like that woman, Yaiko Iwasaki, 27-year-old woman who was a student of Harada Roshi, who was actually on her deathbed with TB, had a profound series of enlightenments. Day after day went deeper, deeper, deeper. She was doing zazen on her back. She couldn't sit up. She was just she had deep, deep faith in Buddhism and happened to be a Zen Buddhist. Her family was exceedingly wealthy, billionaires, and she just had this rare desire to know her true nature. And she wrote Harada Roshi after several of these deepening enlightenments and said, "What a relief to discover that just as I am perfect. Just as I am perfect. This is Shikantaza. Just as I am. Exactly as I am. I am perfect," meaning there's nothing that can be compared to this. It has never come before. It is neither good nor bad, right nor wrong. It is exactly what it is, and that is absolute. No comparison can be made. No lines can be drawn. This is Shikantaza. The third major kind of zazen that we practice, particularly in this school of Zen, is koan Zen. Now, this can get quite complex, at least on the surface, although after your initial awakening, when you go on to subsequent koan, as complex and as abstruse as they sometimes seem to be, the way that you come to the resolution of this koan is to go back to the original understanding of the non-abiding mind and see the koan through that. You learn to do that, so that you learn to utilize this non-abiding mind in all sorts of situations so that it doesn't leave you very often. You're a human being, sometimes it does. And then you just realize that that too is perfect. So we have these breakthrough koan, and the one that some people in this room are working on is the koan mu. How does this work? How does this koan actually work? Now, the first thing I'd say about it, in the context of what we're talking about, which is developing a mind that abides nowhere, is that mu is not an idea. It cannot be figured out, therefore. An idea you can figure out. You can't figure out something that's not an idea. You can't figure it out. Now, this was not told to students many, many years ago. When they were assigned mu, which is the initial breakthrough koan for most students, some of them work on other breakthrough koan, they weren't told this. And they would struggle for months, sometimes years, trying to figure out, well, what does this mean? Does a dog have Buddha nature? Joshua answered mu, and bringing them answers to the teacher, and the teacher would say more zazen, or ring his bell, or shout them out of the room, until they finally got it on their own. I can't figure this out. And then they would go into mu, mu, what is it, mu? What we do is we spare students that initial intense difficulty. We just give them a little shortcut. We tell them right off the bat, mu is not an idea. Mu is everything. Everything you can possibly imagine is mu. When I was assigned this koan by my teacher, Philip Kaplow, almost 40 years ago, he said to me, mu is everything and mu is nothing. And mu is even anything that doesn't fit into the category of everything or nothing. Now bring me mu. That's what he said. Bring it to me. Show it to me. Do you have mu yet? Bring it. Where is it? So you will still try to figure it out because that's human nature. Because our minds are addicted to figuring things out. Because we are very intelligent beings. We're humans. We've figured out everything else, including how to make a smartphone and internet and make an incredible car that'll go thousands of miles without ever needing a tune-up. And all these things we figured out, but we can't figure this one thing out. What is mu? So when we practice mu, how do we do it? We go into the actual mu, not the idea of mu, which is you've seen one redwood, you've seen them all. Oh, I've seen mu already, it's just mu, 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 right? Kind of like working on a mantra, mu, mu. No, it's mu. This becomes like a flowing river. So when you do this kind of mu practice, your mind, just like with breath, just like with Shikantaza, is entering the flow of every moment mu. Remember what I read before, I could read it again out of this book about Su Yun, this famous Zen master, who said that the way to practice is to make it ever closer and ever more fine, this fineness and closeness. It It's not the idea of move somewhere out there, I've got to grab it and it's out there. No, it's mu. It's the actual experience of mu. Now with mu, unlike shikantaza, where you're already at one with your actual experience, you stand up and do kinhin, you're still doing shikantaza. You're eating a salad, you're doing shikantaza. With mu, mu allows you to unstick your mind. You become the flowing river of mu, and you continue it, because I'll tell you right now, mu is everything. So mu does not interfere with anything. It's just that when you're about out and about in the world, and your mind would get stuck on an idea or stuck on a feeling, you would just simply say mu, and you're already unstuck and flowing. This is actually mu. You're saying, this is mu. This is not a clapper that was made by somebody. And I mean, that may be true to a limited degree, but this is mu. Mu. Oh, you've seen one clapper, you've seen them all. You can't do that when you're saying mu. How is this mu? This is mu. This is mu. This is mu. See? And it goes deeper. And when I work with some of you on this call, I'll teach you how to go deeper and wipe out the line between you and mu. This is a very important part of this practice. But they're all basically the same. All of them are about developing a non-abiding mind, about saying to yourself over and over through your practice, don't let it stop me. Don't let this idea stop me. Don't let this struggle with a feeling stop me. Don't let it stop me so that I become an entity apart from the world with characteristics. And the world becomes stopped too. Don't let it stop me. Let me stay with this flowing river, which is my actual life. Now this is extremely simple. It's so simple that it actually isn't easy. It's difficult because our minds are not able to deal with something so utterly simple. We're very addicted to figuring things out, to making maps. So there's a difficulty in this practice. It takes effort. It takes commitment. It takes faith. It takes working closely with a teacher and struggling with obstructions that seem to block us from time to time, these dry periods of our practice. We have to stick with it because it's not natural early on. But as we persist, it becomes more and more everyday, nothing special. Everybody has it. Realize it's not unique to me. Yes, I am a Zen student. Yes, everyone in this room is what I would call a professional. Like you say, a professional athlete. I'm watching the Tour de France. I'm seeing the top of the... These are the ultimate athlete cyclists. No one is better than these. Everyone in this room is exactly like that. You guys do Zazen, you do it seriously, you do it intensely, you are professionals, but it's difficult. It takes training, it takes commitment. But at the same time, it's very simple and natural. It's nothing special. Even though we're good at it, it is actually the true nature of every human being. It's no different for me, for you, for anyone else. We are actually a flowing river. Until my mind creates an idea of a separate entity with characteristics, and I've stopped myself. I've stopped my river. So that, my friends, is the very essence of what this practice is about. I don't think I could make it more simple than that. Simple, but not easy. So let's see. I think I've gone on a little too long and said a few too many words, so I think we'll end there.